business, business, numbers, business. What's that, kittens? The cake signal. Georgie, put down the tomatoes and load up the party cannon. Greg and Toby need my help. Chloe, my cowl. I am vengeance. I am the knight. I am Bat Pie! And this is the White Scarves team up.
Listeners, and welcome back to White Scarves Team Up, the side podcast of Through the Wind Door. Instead of opening up a portal to discuss other worlds, we stay right here and make contact with New Century fans and actors, bringing fresh insight to this crazy two-man act. Our very first team up was with just another fellow fan. Our second team up was with the most recent addition to the New Century stable of actors, Theo Lee. Now we're going all the way back to the beginning and inviting Loretta Sala, who has not only been one of the original voices of New Century, she was apparently doing this prior to there even being a New Century. I did not even know that this one thing existed and would have not even known to ask had it not been a part of one of the early roundtables that Alex did.
Loretta has been here so long that the New Century was the old century.
Oh, dear. Okay, for all of you that aren't aware, Loretta has an enormous cast of important characters to her name in New Century, specifically the voices of Annie Oakley, Harry Arlington, Viola Hartstone, Aunt Cleo, and Captain Beatrix. But one of her very first roles was in something that Alex did way back in the day and is so basically got hit by the algorithm. So the only place it exists is copied onto someone else's YouTube channel that's like has an origin that's not American. So it hasn't gotten hit with anything yet. It was basically an audio drama version of the Alan Moore comic The Killing Joke with Batman. Loretta, could you tell us a little bit about how that came to pass? Because one of the things that has never been gone into that I can recall on roundtables is how Alex gathered you all together to begin with.
Well, this was actually a recommendation from a friend of a friend. My friend Henry, I've known him since high school. Alex had posted up online where like theater people could see and was like, hey, look, I'm looking for voiceover actors. This is the cast that I need. And he just put my name up there. And Alex contacted me and sent me a script. And I pulled out the best recording equipment I had at the time, which wasn't very much, and just recorded all the Barbara Gordon lines I could get. And for the most part, what I recorded that first time is exactly what he used.
Good Lord. Okay. So you impressed him that much then?
Yes. I impressed myself. I was completely surprised.
One of the things mentioned was there was a bunch of heavy breathing that you had to do. I assume, and it was like, the context obviously was not untoward, but it felt, because of the intensity of it, it felt pornographic, I guess. Was this something you originally did as something you sent to Alex or something that he specifically asked you for as, like, background noise?
He specifically asked me for it, but the way he asked me, like, the way it was written, you could just kind of see the red climbing up his face and just kind of being like, I really don't want to ask you this because, like, I don't want to offend you and I don't want to hurt you. And this is not, like, this is not me trying to be untoward or inappropriate. This is what I need. Please, please, please get it done. I'm so sorry. And I'm like, it's fine. I'll be okay.
It could have been a lot worse. He could have asked you onto an interview for a fan podcast.
Hey, we're actually doing okay, you know? We got to some level of confidence and professionalism before we started inviting other people on. And so far, honestly, the luck that I've had, there haven't been that too many audio technical issues because I am not a master with that yet. I'm not even close to being the kind of wizard that Alex is able to pull things off with. So you have a theater background. Did you ever do any voice acting prior to this?
No, yes, I did some for a school project. We were doing a promotion for one of the clubs I was in, for the anime club I was part of. And I've always been a mimic, and I mimicked the character that was supposed to be Momiji in our parody. We took some clips from Fruits Basket. It was all like, you know, it was all above board. But it was basically a parody of a scene in Fruits Basket. I voiced Momiji and was just like, come join the anime club. Hey, Toru, hey. I heard you know about the secret. Does that mean I can hug you? You know, like, just, it sounded a little bit deeper back then, but the caffeine just hit, so.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little happy.
When in doubt, apply caffeine.
Oh, yes.
We all need caffeine to get through the day sometimes, particularly as we get older. So after this, I don't remember exactly, but I think that you might have been involved in the Batman Breakdown audio drama as well, which was entirely new creation of Alex.
I don't remember that one. I think that one was like before he had me on there. We did try to do Batman Hush, but for some reason or another, all my audio samples kept getting lost.
Oh,
and
goodness.
I don't entirely know if he was able to complete it or not. Like, I can't find it anywhere. And I was never given any other updates.
After checking in with Alex about this, I'm not sure if the best answer to the mystery of Hush is toxic internet or toxic fandom, because I have no idea where one begins and the other ends. But I have to agree with Alex's end assertion that he has other stories to tell.
Was that nearer the time? Because in the years since, it really has felt like if Alex is going to apply himself and get a bunch of talented voice actors involved in the project, then it's going to be for New Century. So I imagine that Hush was probably going on nearer the time.
Yes. Hush was almost like right about the same, like just as he was asking me about New Century, it was about the same time. So.
Well, we'll get into this more as we start talking more about the character, but why were you picked specifically to voice Annie Oakley, since that is basically one of the first narrative voices that we hear besides Alex that is asked to carry a significant portion of the story?
That's something you have to ask Alex, because I didn't ask to audition for Annie Oakley. He just sent me a list of characters that he wanted me to read for, and he said, look, please do Annie Oakley. This is something I think you'll do really well at. And a couple of times when I did like record for him, I spoofed Sandy Cheeks from SpongeBob SquarePants, and it's something I told Alex before, and he's told me as well. He's like, Annie is kind of like Miss Sunshine. And I'm like, yeah, she is. Annie's really easy for me because she's like my light half. She's all my optimism.
And when he sent you that list, did you do any, because Annie Oakley is this real world figure, were you familiar with her at all, or did you do any preparation and like research on her life and details about her, or was it more about?
I'm sorry, let me just step on your words.
No. You answer the question.
Yes. So I live in the South. This is Texas. Annie Oakley is like one of the gods of the Old West, you know? You hear about like Sitting Bull, Little Bighorn, all that stuff. We've got, you know, George Strait, of course, down here is like the king of the world. But Annie Oakley, for me, I always felt like sort of a bit of kinship to her. I mean, not because I'm a sharpshooter, because I'm nearly blind, because she had it rough growing up, and she made something for herself out of nothing. And that's kind of like that ideal, I think, is one of the bases of like the American idea of exceptionalism. It's that idealistic principle that a lot of people cling to in this country, be it true or not right now, but in this country, someone who she was practically abandoned as a child. She was like basically sold out to work as a child. Even someone from those kind of humble origins can be someone of significance. So, I looked up to her a lot. I did like watch Annie Get Your Gun. I'm a theater nerd. Not particularly fond of Oklahoma. Good God, that musical makes me want to I hate Oklahoma. Like, absolutely. Like, nothing against the state. I don't know y'all. But, like, that musical, oh, my God. It makes me want to stick an ice pick through my head. It was just like, And I've had to perform in it.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yes.
That'll ruin you for life on anything. If you if you weren't fond of it before, if you have to do 50 takes of anything, then you're going to hate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I find this fascinating because Annie Oakley was someone who I had a vague awareness of, but she isn't this ubiquitous legend who you are aware of, at least in my experience. So it was a lot of the assumed knowledge that some people would go into New Century and hear Annie Oakley and you go, oh, I know Annie Oakley, and oh, she's doing something different to what I know of her, wasn't part of my experience. It kind of came later, but it was fascinating to hear about her life afterwards, in particularly in Steamheart, in one of the earlier chapters that documented a lot of her early struggles that you touched on, Loretta. And I was going to ask you if there were any particular, like, fictional adaptations before this which had informed on your take of her personality, her character, the role, but you touched on that. And I think for me it was just when you read through the account of her life, it helped me to understand a lot of why this person would mean a lot to people, that she wasn't just a person of historical interest, that she did have a story. And so this isn't really a question so much as me relaying my own personal experience, but I guess I just wanted to thank you for introducing me to someone who is this inspiring figure. And it communicated all of that. It communicated why, for a lot of people, she does inspire a lot. And yeah.
Well, thank you.
As I recall, I don't think you had watched Deadwood prior to doing any of the New Century stuff.
No, I hadn't. Alex sent me Deadwood. He sent me like the whole set. He sent me he's like, you got to watch this. You got to watch that. I'm like, Alex, I hate stuff like this. And he's like, please. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll do it for the role. I like dramas with good story, but I feel like a lot of the time there's a lot of gratuitous violence and a lot of there's a reason I don't like Game of Thrones. Don't tell anyone. But
No,
no one likes Game of Thrones anymore.
No. I didn't like it first.
I know.
I read the books first, and it was if I read one more description of golden armor, I'm going to poke my eye out. But for me, Deadwood is really interesting, and I think it's a very close take on the American West. I think it's really good for what it is. Mm-hmm. It's just not my cup of tea, but you do it for the role.
Absolutely. No, I was thinking of it more from the perspective of, I did not have as much familiarity with Annie Oakley. I was aware of her as a thing. I had never watched any either musical or any other kind of interpretation of her prior to. But after having learned more about her and after having experienced the way that you voice acted her, she is the far more outwardly chipper version of the way Calamity Jane is portrayed in Deadwood. And it's kind of like the two sides of that. Both of them are women that had to grow up in an environment that was not friendly to women, particularly roles where they went outside what they were expected to do for that time and that culture. It makes for Annie being a really good character to bring us into the kind of world that Alex wanted New Century to be, but it also means that when we eventually put Annie to rest, a lot of the cracks are finally showing in what she has gone through on the inside. But that's moving a little bit of ahead. Let's come back around to some of the initial stuff with Annie. I had a chance to listen to a lot of the roundtable stuff that you did and talk about Annie along the way. And one of the things I learned as a result of some of the stuff in Steamheart was that when you're comparing yourself to the various large roles, some of the stuff that you were saying earlier, that you compare Annie to grown-up you, someone that has learned how to function in the world in spite of anxiety and other neuroatypical aspects of yourself. Did that inform your portrayal of Annie from the beginning, or was it something that you discovered along the way?
It was something I discovered along the way. It was like, how do I put this? You start doing it before you realize you're doing it. Georgie, what the hell? Sorry, my cat. She's like, I found a bag and I'm going to sit on it. And I'm like, no, you're not. See, that's why. I'm sorry. I love my kitten. I really do. But she's...
We love cats too.
She needs to be the center of attention. Her and Chloe. If you listen sometimes to some of like our blooper reels, you'll hear them in the background.
I like to imagine an alternate scenario where every time a pet wanders into the recording booth, it just gets worked into the story somehow, like during a tent shootout, and it's like, get the cat out of here, they're in danger.
Well, it's something that came up during Theo's interview, was me wondering if your cats were used as the background noise for Gwendolyn's room in Princess Thieves, but she wasn't able to answer that one way or the other, so it might have just been canned cat noises that Alex put in.
I mean, if he wanted cat noises, we would have given him cat noises.
Wait, does that mean that you would have gotten the noises from your cats, or you would have simulated the cat noises yourself, or both?
Oh dear.
I will let you decide what you think.
That's for you to decide, listener.
So I'm sorry, we were talking about your experience with Annie. Sharon in particular talked about how playing Abigail has helped her with some of her own real-world issues. Did you experience any of that similar stuff yourself over the course of living in this character for, like, I believe it's 4+ books now?
Yes. Oh, yes. Annie to me is optimism through adversity, and we've all been going through a whole lot of adversity recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I was having some other personal issues where I was not in a good place, not mm-hmm. mentally, not fiscally, physically. But having to like kind of pull all my optimism together for this character and kind of hold on to it helped me power through that. Because mm-hmm. I kept thinking to myself, like, Annie had it considerably worse than I ever will. I mean, at the very least, I've got air conditioning, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I've got air conditioning. I've got a family who loves me and who wants me. Big fat Greek wedding, people, just for reference. But but there were a lot of issues that I think we all went through. And yeah, Annie did. And Annie helped me power through a lot of things.
Given the years of having Annie in your life and the personal way she's connected with you, this is a hard question to ask, and it's a harder memory to remember, but what was it like once her death scene finally came and you had to not only say goodbye, but you had to act it out?
Oh, God. Okay. So the death scene came at the worst possible time because...
Oh, no. Oh, God, I remember this now. Listeners, for those of you that are aware... We are going to be covering some stories, some discussions that already happened in Steamheart Roundtable.
Oh, God, spoilers!
No, we don't have to worry about that. I've already put it up there that this interview is only for people that have been through the entire thing. Obviously, a lot of our podcast is for new listeners in terms of keeping away spoilers, but this is going to be open to long-term fans more than more recent fans. It's fine. I'm only mentioning this because I remember part of this story from the actual conversation that happened after the final episode of Steamheart dropped, but I wanted to revisit it specifically because there are people that might be interested or never have heard the roundtable or might be getting into this through our podcast. Maybe, I don't know, but I'm sorry. Go ahead and tell the story, Loretta.
So Alex put this on me at the same time that I had found out that a very close friend of mine had passed away. Mm-hmm. And he'd been sick for a very long time. We just thought he had more time than he did. the way I found out about the passing was I was at work and it was through a text message from my sister, who's not even close to this, but it was very public. It was announced very publicly. And she like was one of the first people she was the first person to console me. But that's also how I found out about the death. She was like, I'm so sorry. I know you were close to him. Is there anything I can do? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she sent me the news link and I was crushed. I had to leave my office that day. I have a day job. We all do, but I had to leave my office that day and I was kind of broken for the rest of the week. I immediately went, you know, to go visit the family and was grieving for a while. And so, like, I get this information while I'm grieving. And in a weird way, it felt like while I was at the funeral, I felt like I was going to have to bury myself in a weird way for this, you know, to make this sound believable. And what kept me through it was the fact that there are going to be other roles. And Annie has done a whole lot of good. At least I hope so. I mean, for me, at least she's done a whole lot of good. And I'm glad to hear that for others, she's been good to them, too.
She really has.
So it was a lot to work through. And Alex didn't push anything. He was just like, just take your time. I know this is rough, especially now. But please, can you try? And Alex he's not the sort of director to push anything unless he feels like he's being ignored or he's being disregarded. Mm-hmm. You know, you offend someone, you make them feel like they're worthless and they're gonna lash out. But he doesn't do that. It's more along the lines of like, I'm going to pressure you, and then I'm gonna pressure you further. And it's like, have you gotten any of my messages? What's going on here? But in this case it was just take your time, take a breath. This is kind of further down along, just do what you can.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, my other character was also in Steamheart was also going through a similar thing. But since we're just talking about Annie, I'll save all that for later. Yeah, it was the worst possible timing, but it was oddly appropriate. It helped me work through the feelings and emotions I needed to be able to voice it correctly.
Annie, Alex is already very good at writing things and saying things that invoke emotion in others, but he's also always managed to get really good people to voice out those experiences. And the experience with both Annie's death and then her quote-unquote ghost coming back to most recently have conversations with Abigail in Uncivil Outlaw, that's rough stuff there. I mean, we wouldn't be doing this podcast if New Century hadn't really sucked us in on a primal level. And I'm pretty sure that there were many times when I finally listened to all of Steamheart in one setting. Well, this is true for all of his audio dramas. I can be at a remove from a text. I can't be at a remove from an audio drama where there is naked emotion happening in my ears, if not on screen. So every now and then I had to take a break in order to process whatever just happened. And Annie's final moments was definitely one of those. So yeah, don't fear that you didn't. She touched all of us, and it was sad, and it was also a passing of the torch in definitely the most emotionally possible way. Like, not even on a level of, say, ancient Steve Rogers passing on the shield to Sam in Endgame. This was harder than that, and yet we love it even more, in a way, as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. When I got to that chapter and when I got through that scene, I think I had another chapter or two available and I just stopped, and I may have even been out on a run at the time, and I think I just stopped the run and sat down for a bit, and it stopped me in my tracks quite literally, because it was saying goodbye to someone who, whether fictional or not, does bring a positive difference to your life. And even though the memories of that person can still enact or help you to make positive decisions and progress for yourself, as shown in the recent episode where we get to see Abigail reason out her current situation by playing off of a version of Annie. What I love about your love is a strange word to use, but what really rings true about your performance as the Shade in Uncivil Outlaw is that we can recognize that it's Annie, but it's not quite right. It's not a perfect representation of her, because that optimism which she always brings, even if she in her final moments confesses that she gives so much of it that it she sometimes doesn't save enough for herself, you don't feel it as palpably in the Shade, because no one really could quite manifest that energy except for Annie. And I love that we can still have these memories and we can revisit the stories and revisit the podcast as many times as we want or even need to, because her stories, her scenes, her actions, her words will always have an effect on us. And as we move forward within the context of the fictional world and in life, that her passing makes us feel like, well, what would this character say in this situation? What questions would she ask me, and how would I respond to that? It means something. It means something to Abigail, and it definitely means something to me.
Well, we're all just being, sorry. This podcast is meant to be about you, but you know, ever since Alex recommended this, this also is ending up being a little bit of a chance to be able to express to you in words, because you haven't actually heard us talk at all about anything involving Annie yet on the podcast. We are only just getting into Secret Rooms, and there are a lot of episodes that are already recorded that I just have to edit in. We talk a lot about Annie, and we will talk a lot about Annie, because getting all the way to Steamheart is going to take us close to a year at this point. But yeah, I hope you enjoy some of the greater detail that we go into as more episodes come out.
Well, frankly, first of all, I want to say I'm touched. I'm very touched. So thank you for that. And I've listened to you're welcome. Thank you. You guys. I've loved doing voices since I was a kid. And to know that a voice that I'm doing is, you know, has made an impact on people, like a positive impact on people, just, it's very touching. And I forgot what I was going to say. I'm at a loss for words. So congratulations. Well, that did a whole lot.
Absolutely.
We're a particularly verbose bunch, aren't we?
Well, you already brought it up, and that's actually the next question on the list. So yeah, saying goodbye to Annie and bringing Harry Arlington into her own, particularly as she is now going to be, we don't yet know how it's actually going to play out, because Alex still has to write Stone Spring Maidens, but it definitely seems like she is either going to be the sole or primary protagonist of that story, and there's going to be a whole lot of stuff that is tied up with that. As a starter, when you were talking about comparing Annie to your adult self, the counterpoint to that was that you embodied Harry as being your younger self before you had been able to figure out a lot of the complicated parts of being in the world and who you were and all that sort of thing. Do you think it's going to be different playing Harry now that she has a story focused on her rather than being one of many in an ensemble?
Yes and no. I think it's going to be more difficult because I'm going to have to really, really hone my voice. Usually, because Harriet is a little bit more difficult than Annie anyway, getting into the Harriet mindset, it's not, how I put it, it's not quite negative, but it's more like, I guess a comparison would be, in My Little Pony, for example, you have Andrea Liebman. Please, Pinkie Pie, don't be mad at me.
Can we hurry this up? We're on a schedule here.
But Andrea Liebman, who she does the voices of both Pinkie Pie and Fluttershy, and if you look at them, they're very opposite of each other. So getting into Annie is much easier because I'm more into Annie's mindset now than I am Harriet. But I think it's going to be more difficult because I'm going to have to focus more on the shyer, quieter part of myself. I have to bring that out. And by definition, being shy and quiet, you're not, you know, it's not easy to be brash and to bring out that performance, you know, to perform because you want to hide. And Annie is a consummate performer in whatever form she's in. She's always, you know, right out there, guns blazing.
Speech making.
Yep. And I love Harriet. I absolutely love Harriet. And also because people are a little bit more aware, I'm afraid. Like I went into Harriet knowing that she is on the autism spectrum. What I've tried to do with her is she was born in the South and she was this shy, autistic, brilliant woman. And I don't want anyone to see this as a parody. I want to be very respectful of that community, especially. And right now, too, people are worried about voiceover actors, races and all that. Mm-hmm. And this is not to be an insult on any race, creed, color, anything like that. To me, Harriet is, regardless of her race, she is a very reserved woman who happens to be on the spectrum, happens to be Black, and happens, I don't know if am I allowed to say that? But
it's little tricky, but, you know, we understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, and, like, these are just characteristics. They are parts of her, but they're not all of her. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to keep up with all of it.
Yeah, and there is certainly an earnestness to your performance, which I think gets to the heart of the matter, which is that when you're bringing her personality forward, it's the subject that you bring up of getting voice actors who are of the same ethnicity as the characters they are playing is an important conversation to have and everything, but it is something that I feel that one of the most important things to do is to convey the identity of the character. And I think with Harriet, that has always come through her voice. Because the only New Century book that I have sat down and read all the way through has been Uncivil Outlaw, I haven't actually had the chance to sit down and read dialogue from or narration from Harry and see how her character comes off from the page. So my own experience has been just solely through your vocal performance of her. And so, you know, granted, that makes me biased. Of course, the only experience to me sounds will come across as a effective one because that's how I've experienced it. But even so, I would say that with Harry, the goal of conveying who this person is always feels like it has been achieved particularly well with Harry. Of all the cast of New Century, there's a lot of characters we love. Harry is one of those people who just, no matter what, I am convinced, you know, it's the storyteller's prerogative to do whatever they want with their characters. But I swear to God, Alex, if you do anything more to Harry, that separate conversation.
Calm down.
One I've already had with him.
Making sure that you give marginalized people voices in a piece of media is always an important conversation to have. The thing to consider here is that this is not like any of the stuff that, what's a great example? Frigging Scarlett Johansson playing an Asian woman in Ghost in the Shell, or in the case of something that's a little bit closer to home, Laura Bailey, who is an incredible voice actress, doing the voice of a Black woman in Uncharted 4 and Uncharted Lost Legacy, because those are big operations that can spread a net far and wide and actually get the talent in and pay them properly for the work that they're doing, there's no excuse for not finding that kind of thing. And New Century has always been more of a, not even a scrappy underdog. It's like, what's the equivalent is like off Broadway. So Alex brings in who he can along the way. And even he has made more of an effort to, okay, I want to try and cast a First Nations woman to voice this character in Uncivil Outlaw. Okay, I want a trans man, so he brings on one of the Discord members, Orion, to voice that character for Stone Spring Maidens. Or even as most recently as the Definitive Edition, where he gets Eric Jones to play the voice of Nathan. So even he is trying his best, but it would be more difficult to go back and replace every character. He's already been having some of those issues in terms of, in the case of Merlane, having that recast by Maya Santandrea, just because Merlane isn't a character that can be easily put to one side, and she's going to continue to be a significant role in anything that's being told going forward. But it's far more difficult to recast characters that we have been with for a while with other roles, even if we wanted to. So it's important enough to do better going forward. And Alex has clearly proven that that's what he wants to do.
And I've said to Alex too, I was like, look, I understand that we have a very limited cast. If for some reason you do find someone who fits the role better than I do, by all means, give it to them, because I love this project. I really do.
It's not like he wouldn't find something else for you to do either.
Yeah, but I'm very versatile.
I do want to add that I don't ever want to put words in anyone's mouth, and Alex may always change his mind in order to do what is best for this creative endeavor. I also don't want to sound like I'm making excuses, just because I love these characters as voiced by these actors and don't want anything to change. But I can't say I'm not biased. Over the course of these roundtables and my time spent with Alex, Sharon, Theo, Loretta, and now Matt, I've come to understand what some of these characters mean to them. They may have all started out as ideas in Alex's head, and he has mentioned how they are often facets of his own personality. If something like a movie or TV show or animation adaptation of these works ever came to pass, then the right choices should be made to cast appropriately. But Abigail wouldn't be the same without Sharon. Harry and Annie are two sides of a coin with Loretta, and I've come to understand now that something is very similar is going on with Jeremy and Oberon in regards to Matt. These characters are not just given life by the actors, but the fictional stories and behaviors are informed upon by their personal experiences. And in the case for Harry Arlington in particular, one of the thoughts in my head is the symbolism of what Loretta drew on to play her. Moving from her status as the more reclusive wunderkind to becoming the empowered adult that Annie represented for Loretta. But that's just my own thoughts, and frankly, eagerness to see Harry come into her own with a baller new hairstyle and sheathed in the power armor we have seen in the concept art for Stone Spring Maidens. Much like is happening with one of the inspirations for this series, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it makes far more sense in general for the old guard to make way for the new, where we can start fresh with characters that can be voiced appropriately as needed. But for now, let's move on to a character that we've already spoken on extensively in our coverage.
Aunt Cleo, she is such a wonderful personality who is, again, very hard to say goodbye to midway through Let Them Go. Her final chapter is a balance of quiet, heartfelt connection between her and Rebecca, but also triumphant badassness when she fells the bar guest, and then tragic finality with her sacrifice. And we both were curious, that what was Alex's direction like when you were preparing the audio for these scenes, and what influences or personal aspects did you draw on to give voice to Aunt Cleo?
Well, if you listen to Aunt Cleo, before I did Aunt Cleo, he had me do a couple of very prim side characters for the one for the Christmas Thieves and one for the beginning of Steamheart. I actually played Penrose's mother.
For clarification, this scene was one of the ones transposed from Steamheart to the definitive edition of Secret Rooms in the new chapter one titled The Lonely Boy.
So there was a touch of that in there, but Aunt Cleo is made of considerably sterner stuff than Mrs. Penrose. There's a lot of women in my family. We're Albanian immigrants, most of us. I mean, I was born in the U.S., but like, for the most part, there's that old world traditionalism. But there's also like, you know, I've got this aunt who will, if you're not dressed for the party, she will march you into her closet and she will, you know, she will make sure that you get dressed for the party. And she has a very, how do I put it, like a polite rule for everything, for every situation. And she will not break that. But the second you mess with someone in her family, the shoes are coming off and she's throwing them at your head. And Cleo kind of dances on that line, especially with, oh my God, I forgot his name.
Dawson.
Yeah.
Dawson.
Dawson. Dinkelberg. No, sorry.
We will never forget his name.
Yeah, especially with Dawson. Well, just shows how much of a shit he is. I mean, frankly, yeah. One of my favorite lines is Annie Oakley is when he had me describing the little spotted bastard in New Athens.
In this case, she's referring to Mayor Caleb Buck, who, until double-checking, I had forgotten even had a first name. And, oh boy, we have a recent account about the experience of voicing him from fellow member of the Magnificent Seven, Matt Wardle. Obviously, that's a story for a future team-up, but man, it is a doozy.
It's like a nature show. Dawson reminds me very much of that particular character in a way. And Cleo will be polite and be courteous because she knows she can draw in more flies with honey. And if things can be done, if things can be expedited, you know, like, all right, I'll just be polite. You know, I know my manners. I'll be polite to this gentleman. And hopefully that's the fastest way I can get him out of my hair. I can sort things out with my nieces when he's gone. She makes me think of the White Queen.
The White Hidden Queen as in Emma Frost, or?
No, the White Queen as in
Lion, the Witch,
Elizabeth,
the Wardrobe.
Queen Elizabeth of York.
One of the pitfalls of being a geek is that there are just too many White Queens of note to draw on, and it never occurred to us at the time to think of history instead. Okay.
I was way off.
Elizabeth of York, the mother to Henry VIII.
Okay.
And her motto was hidden and patient. Like, I'm not even talking about like the Star Show. I actually read about her, and I've been studying history since I could read. I kind of drew from that, and I drew from my experience as having to be the very prim lady, and also from familial experience where, you know, my grandma is one of the sweetest people in the whole world. And she would, you know, if I asked her to, she would bake me like 6 bundt cakes a day. It was fantastic.
Did you ask her to?
I didn't ask her to, but she saw that I liked them. So she would bake a bundt cake for me.
Wow.
And
This is a grave responsibility that has been placed into your hands.
Yeah. So, and there's inspiration in when I do Abuelita as well, from my grandmother. I love the woman. She's one of the sweetest people in the world, but, like, I don't remember what my cousin did. So, in Albanian cultures, there's a really long rolling pin. Like, it's basically like a long stick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's even. Like, it's not like the French rolling pin where it's, like, the big freaking thing and, like, little things on the side. No, this is, like, a long stick. It's almost like a dowel rod.
Mm-hmm.
And you use it when you make the family meal, when you make the pastries or whatever. These things are, like, sacred. Mm-hmm. And every Albanian woman I know that's married and has a family has, like, 7 of them. She was brandishing that stick, and she gave my cousin the spanking of his life. And it's, like, you know, you're in trouble, you know, when you've pissed her off. And I kind of want there to be that little edge there, too, to be like, yes, I will do things the right way. Yes, I will call you, and I will love you, and I will care for you. But do not cross me.
Mm. I say this without reservation. I love Rebecca. Aunt Cleo is the biggest badass in Let Them Go. And it's just the two-hit combo of her going out and managing to get the shotgun hit on the Vargas and then just spitting, devil. And it's just, oh, it's so good. And when I was first listening to Let Them Go, I didn't know what to think about Aunt Cleo. And I think I made the incorrect assumption that she maybe, you know, not as kind as she was. I thought that maybe she would blame Rebecca. And I'm not even sure what my reasoning was for this. But then the more time you spend with her, it kind of simulates Rebecca's own feelings as she is reconnecting with Aunt Cleo. And I swear, if I ever write New Century fan fiction, it's going to be that Aunt Cleo survives Let Them Go and Rebecca and her go on adventures with the dog Rafe.
Goodness.
I mean, I would kind of love to have like Aunt Cleo sort of be like that voice in Rebecca's head, just being like, being like, straighten your corset. And I can't draw her voice straight out like I can for most, because she actually takes some prep. But I'd be like, remember, take aim, take a breath, make sure your corset's straight, and fire. Like, just, that's, to me, that's the sort of person Aunt Cleo is. And in a weird way, she's also kind of, like, inspired by Viola as well. There's a lot of crossover between my characters.
Well, yeah, we're going to get into Viola in just a second here. Honestly, based on some of the conversations we've had about Rebecca's experience and how that mirrors certain mythological stuff, when we talk about Rebecca integrating the best aspects from Aunt Cleo and her sister into herself in order to become the triple goddess, we could almost, like, it hasn't been on screen, but I could almost imagine that Rebecca is specifically walking around with the shades of her sister and her aunt still with her and speaking to her and guiding in her, so she never really is truly alone. So I like the idea. I mean, it probably won't necessarily happen, not unless Alex chooses to revisit a story with Rebecca herself, like an actual spiritual successor to Let Them Go. But given how that's come into play with Abigail, I wouldn't put it past him. But I do briefly want to go back to something we skipped over, and I'll just fix this in the edit. I didn't fix it. I edit these episodes a lot as is, and having everything being just so in order is honestly not high on my list. I want what we say to be entertaining, concise, and comprehensible. And if I tried somehow to keep everything in order, then that would basically make the future edit of Matt's interview nigh impossible. It does make my earlier editorial commentary about Harry a little redundant. At the time, I thought maybe we just failed to cover it, when in fact, I just had to wait 10 minutes and I'd get to hear this directly from Loretta's mouth. But when I pondered trying to unstitch that, it was just one more delay to getting this out the door, and I have enough of those. So let's just barrel right back into the breach. One of the things that struck me very much is the idea that if Harry is your younger self and Annie is your adult self, with the passing of Annie, that Harry, she wasn't as affected as much by Annie's passing as Abigail was due to the closeness of that relationship. But I like the metaphorical idea that Harry is basically going to come into her own and become the adult version of herself based on some of the experiences that she had with Annie as a mentor figure. Have you thought at all? I mean, obviously we can't spoil Swanstring Maidens much since it doesn't even exist yet, but have you thought about how that might come into play as Harry becomes the protagonist of her own story?
I feel like Annie, in her way, was a little bit of a big sister figure to Harriet. I think Harry's relationship, because you got to remember, Annie and Butler are kind of like salt and pepper. You get one with the other. I think it would be more in her relation to how she sees Frank Butler change, whether or not Alex decides to go into that. And I think that's going to affect her character more. I think that she had a very, like, she had a very deep fondness for Annie. I think a lot of people did. I think from her perspective, I think she's going to see it more as, like, this has a huge effect on Butler, who's, like, who's become a very, very close friend to her. And has kind of helped her step out of herself and back into, you know, step out of her own brain and back into reality. And I've had moments like that. And, you know, I feel like Annie kind of took her cues from Butler, and she's probably going to miss that extra cue and that extra attention.
I like what you are saying, where Harry does pick up on these things with Annie and with Butler, because it touches on something that I've discussed with some of our Secret Rooms episodes, which one or two of them may be out by the time this interview is out. But the idea that with James's character, it would be so easy to write him in a way where his way of making sense of the information that's presented to him would make him someone who's cut off from other people, and he rarely interacts with or picks up on things that other people are going through. But what I always, and I think love is the right word here, what I love about James and Harry is that as much as we can see that this is something that is difficult for them, that they do try. They are trying really hard, and they're actually a lot better than people who a lot of us know, who have all the wherewithal to be able to pick up everything that is going on with people around them. They just choose not to. Harry taking a lot of what Annie showed to her, and also picking up on what Butler is going through and making sense of the absences in his life, and thinking that she may decide that if Annie is no longer here, then maybe I can bring some of what she brought into the world through my own actions. So yeah, I love that about Harry. I think that's the honest truth.
Thank you.
It occurs to me that one of the most difficult moments in, say, Arlington is Harry getting caught up in being with her family and feeling content, and as a result, she suddenly forgets that her little brother is no longer with them and brings him up. And it's the kind of thing that normal people might potentially forget in a different way. Because of the way Harry processes things, she has a momentary disconnect with the flow of time and actually forgets that her little brother is gone, and so therefore makes this understandable, uncomfortable moment during the story, but she is doing it because she is happy. She is not doing it because she is thoughtless or insensitive. And that's a really good way of accentuating that experience of being neuroatypical, I guess. I don't know if I made any of that clear from what I was saying, but that's I definitely had an emotional connection there between what you were just saying and how Loretta's expression of Harry brings that into the world.
I love Harry's scenes with her family, and there's actually a little bit of a headcanon that Alex Ooh. And I have regarding Harriet and Truth.
I do get that Loretta uses the word headcanon here because of the whole problem with a certain popular author continuing to say things about her characters that were never backed up anywhere in the text. But given that this is an attempt to seem woke without actually doing any of the work, the recent words of Graham Stark come to mind.
You're the developer. If it's your headcanon, that's just canon.
Harry notices things, but she's not very good at expressing them. Like, Penrose is the same. I think she'll notice that, let's say, for example, Truth is very emotional. She's very straightforward with her thoughts, straightforward with her emotions. And one of my headcanons is that, like, the way she and Harriet have learned to communicate is very weird, but it's sort of nonverbal. Mm. In that, like, I told Alex the story. Truth has a pocket watch, and she gets frustrated at one point at her job, and she slams it on her desk and breaks the damn thing. And Harriet is, you know, who's walking by, notices. Like, she notices that Truth's not carrying her pocket watch, and she's not using it, and then she sees it on the desk, busted and broken. She takes it to her shop, and she fixes it. She polishes it and makes it stronger, and just kind of, like, leaves it on the desk with, like, a little cloth under it, and Truth sees her later and just gives her a hug as a thank you. It's not easy for Harriet to verbalize, so if she can show emotion, or if she understands her own emotion, she does it through action.
I like that. That's good.
Yes. That's great.
And I'm hoping we get to see some more of that in Stone Spring Maidens when it eventually sees the light of day.
Mm. It's difficult for us to talk about Stone Spring Maidens because we've extrapolated a lot from snippets here and there, but what it boils down to is that it gives Harry a chance to continue her story, and we cannot wait for that.
Yeah, well, we can't we can't wait for anything. I mean, you were the one that was totally geeking out about loving Panther Man, and we're already like, oh god, we still have to get through Cartographer's Handbook before we can get to the real story we want to talk about, cats in jungles. So
we all love the cat stories.
We do.
Yeah. Look, I will not apologize for my love for my panther boyfriend, okay? Just leave me alone.
Hey, I saw him first.
Damn it.
All right. We still have a ways to go here, so let's try and get to it. But will they, in fact, get to it? Will our podcasting principals pursue their prey perniciously? Will our high-pitched heroine hold against the horrifying hounding? Tune in next week for the thrilling conclusion. Same bat pie time, same bat pie channel. And finally, I went back and forth on what kind of music to use for the outro, as Loretta in general brings one kind of energy, and our discussion brought another. Some of the pieces I initially looked at are going to fit in better during parts of our retrospective, so the one I finally landed on is another relatively recent one. I first found it in a custom Avengers tribute video, and in honor of Annie and Cleo, in honor of all of New Century's heroes, both fallen and extant, I give you Legends Never Die.
Legends never die when the world is calling you. Can you hear them screaming out your name? Legends never die, they become a part of you every time you